Right, this week is Parshas Toldos, and what I'm going to try to do tonight, you know, as usual, is new things. In other words, if it's a repeat of an older idea, then I try to skip it. We're looking with the perspective of the Netziv in Parshas Toldos. So the first question which he's going to ask is one that many ask, and that is Ve'ela Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the generations of Yitzchak ben Avraham. What should follow after that is Yitzchak holid as Yaakov Esav or something like that, right? Yitzchak has Yaakov and Esav. But the Torah says Avraham holid as Yitzchak. So he's essentially, the perspective that the Netziv comes from is that the word toldos doesn't mean the generations. Look what he says. Halichos yimei chayov. He says the stories of his life. Okay, and the next point is Avram Alidus Yitzchak Zeu Michlal Toldosav Shebecholdu Rechav Alichosav Yenikar V'Rashum Shu Bnei Shel Avram. The point of these stories is to show you that Avraham Holidus Yitzchak, not so much that Avraham was the father, which is what you know Rashi or whoever it says. I think Rashi says that because people were saying that Avimelech says no, to show you that what's the line of this story. In other words, it's Avram Holides Yitzchak. Emphasis is on Yitzchak. Not that Avram Holides Yishmael, but Yitzchak. That the line that we're following in these stories, in these Halichas Olam, is Yitzchak's story. Avaloya Nikar Ba'alichos of Shubno, but it wasn't clear that he's his son. Because Yitzchak was B'chol Yichosav, he was the son of Avram. Therefore, Vayhi Yitzchak. So now that we've established that we're learning the stories of the line of Avraham, and that it's Yitzchak. Yes, Yitzchak ben Avraham. Of course, we know that Yitzchak's the son of Avraham. But that it's that Avram's line continues through Yitzchak. That's what the pasuk is telling us. Vayhi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana Bikachto es Rivka. So I don't want to read the whole comment here in pasuk Chav. But I emphasize for you the points which he's trying to make is if the Torah is trying to tell us that Yitzchak got married when he was 40, so just tell us that he got married when he was 40. What does it mean? Bikachto es Rivka bas Bisuel Arami Mipadan Aram. The problem that those of us who know Trump certainly have here is that you look at the word Bikachto es Rivka, and Ravi of course is a ta'am mafsik, right? It makes a pause. But the Netziv says, ignore that for a second. I mean, he doesn't mention the Trump specifically, but I'm telling you that this is the point that he's trying to make, is that it's the emphasis is on who is Rivka, that he was 40 years old when he took Rivka bas Bisuel Arami Ripadan Aram Machos Lavan Arami Lo Leisha, that it's her whole yichus, it's her, where she comes from, that is the emphasis of this text. Because what's the Torah trying to tell us? Not that he got married, Shkoyach, he got married. It's that he specifically married Rivka, and who's Rivka? She's the daughter of Bisuel, sister of Lavan. Where's she from? She's from Padan Aram. Why on earth is he marrying a girl from Padan Aram? That makes no sense. Why? I mean, Padan Aram, from where they live, is hundreds of miles away. Why would he be marrying this girl? And look at her yichus. Achos Lavan Arami.
That's what Avram actually wanted in discussion from.
And that's the point. Correct. And that's the point. Okay? That look at the last line that I emphasized in this paragraph. Bikol Magam Nasas Rivka Machma Shehu Ben Avraham. The only reason why Yitzchak married Rivka is because he's the son of Avraham. If he was just some Canaanite guy, it would make no sense whatsoever. How on earth would you have found this girl, and why on earth would you be marrying her? And the answer is because he's a Ben Avraham, and she's from not just that neck of the woods, but she's from the mishpacha. And that's something which in the end, did Avram plan it that way? That's a different discussion. But that's where we get to Rivka from. Okay, now we know that Rivka has a problem with this pregnancy. First of all, she's barren. Okay, pasuk says pasuk of Aleph, Akarahi, she was barren, and God somehow heeds. You know, the idea of Ayetar Yitzchak is that it refers to tefillah, that it refers to a form of davening. So it's an interesting question whether Rivka is praying as well, okay? Because the pasuk, I know what Rashi says, but the pasuk doesn't say that Rivka does. It says Vayetar Yitzchak Hashem Lenochach Ishto. So that doesn't say that Rivka was engaged in tefillah. It just says that Yitzchak was, and that God listened to him, which throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into the way some people look at it. Anyways, she becomes pregnant. Now we know that Rivka becomes pregnant, and Rivka understands that she is pregnant. Does Rivka know that she's pregnant with two? Did she have a sonogram?
No.
I would say she probably did not have a sonogram. I'm willing to put money on that. Okay.
But she got a tweet.
Right. Well, she did have. We know after the fact that she had twins, but she's having a crazy pregnancy, and so she wants to know what's going on. Vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. I mean, even the question of lamazan anochi. What does that mean? You know, what is she really asking? She's saying, "Why did I ask for this? Did she ask for it? What do I need this for? What's the whole point of pregnancy? All my girlfriends told me that it wasn't as bad as this. This is pretty horrible." Okay. Anyway, vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. So, what does it mean? She goes to seek out God. Okay, what does that mean? So the Nitziv has a perspective. He says, "Ha'ikar kaperish Rashi v'Rashbam." Again, we're in Chaf Beis now, on page 1. L'sholos ha'navi das Hashem rutzano b'zeh. She wanted to ask a prophet. Okay, so who's a prophet? Well, we know of a prophet who lived in her time, father-in-law. Okay, so the Nitziv says Abram is good, but you know what? He's not what she needed. Take a look towards the bottom. Perish chayashneo fanei navi. There's two ways that that a prophet perceives things. Echad mashim adaberi mo Hashem l'sha. One is he gets a message from God. Okay, God tells him something. V'hasheni haroa dvarim ne'alamim beruach hakodesh. Somebody who has a vision, who can understand, who has a divine wisdom, that somebody who just hears a message from God, and I'm not denigrating or belittling hearing a message from God, but he's saying that there's two different types. Avram hayanavi beofen arishon levad. I'm just jumping from the part which is in bold. Mishumachi halchal adam gadol sheyada ki hu ro'ev yodea. So she had to go to somebody who could discern and who could understand. Okay, now I've heard. I don't know if any. I'm sure you guys have also heard of. There are some people. You know, we could talk about whatever we want about, for example, modern medicine. But there are some people from certain cultures who have just an ancient tradition that goes back to whatever. You know, when people say that they look at a pregnant lady and they say, "Oh, you're carrying a boy, you're carrying a girl." You know what that is? That's a Baba Maisa. Okay, but there are some people who, from a certain kind of culture, who have a tradition for hundreds and hundreds, maybe even 1,000 years. Who knows? That they just have a certain kind of ability, and that is, you know, and not, it's different, but
they don't know. Even the doctors don't know.
Okay, so fine. No. I'm not gonna. I use that as an example of knowing, but there are. I just heard a story from some guy who was telling me that his grandmother was some kind of village, and she was the local just guru when it came to certain things. Okay, and it's, you know, all I'm saying is that there's something to it, okay, and it's not so pushy to say it's all Baba Mises. There are some things which are Baba, but anyway, so here he's saying there's a Ruach HaKodesh element to a kind of prophecy that she's looking for in her seeking out Lidrosh Es Hashem. And what is she told? She's told, Vayomer Hashem La, so through this, the person to whom she goes to, although some will say that she's actually getting a prophecy, but I'm not going to get into that debate. I, this is not a Rashi class. Vayomer Hashem La, Shnei Goyim Bevitnech. What does he say? There are two Goyim, two nations in your belly, which I'll just say is womb. Ushnei Leumim, and two, what's the difference between a Goy and a Leum, and an Umah? Okay, good question. I think we saw that 2 years ago, but I don't remember. But anyway, they're going to come out from you. Okay, now, is this information that she's being given, is it telling her that she has two children inside of her? Maybe indirectly, maybe. But she isn't told. Right? Notice, Shnei Goyim
Bevitnech. How could that be possible if she didn't have two?
No, that
one will have two.
The one will have two, but when it says
"Verabi avot sa'ir,"
they will part immediately.
Right. Okay. So that's the point. And I just found one thing which I thought was interesting, because if you look carefully, look at the next pasuk. What's the word afterwards? Vinei. Tomim bibino. What's tomim mean? Don't say twins, because what's to'umim? Twins is to'umim with an aleph, and this is tough vav Mem,
sons.
Mem.
Sons.
No, that's not. That's not. No, no, I don't think anybody would make that argument. So I actually try, I looked up the word tome, and it means something like straight. Straight. Right. So straight. Yeah. So let's take a look. Let's take a look. So I'm going to show you two couple things here. Ayachiparedu means I'm on the bottom page one here. Hevdel shebineim yenikar take up yitzir someone abetan. So the question that I asked about what these vayomer Hashem la, what she was told in terms of there being two sons, that's my question. The Nitziv doesn't really address that, but it says that but what the Nitziv does say is that the difference between them is going to be discerned immediately when they are born. Okay, and then of course they're born. Vihinei mashma'o pele mashalo el aldas. In other words, the idea that there are twins is something which was not expected. So even after what she was told, the idea that there are two was strange. Hainusha haya tomim bivitna velo tuumim. Or maybe that's what he's saying. Maybe what's strange is that there's tomim and not tuumim. Tuumim means twins. What's tomim? V'zeh achidush. She thought that the separation would be when they came out of her, but inside her they were twins. So, right, chalukim means different. Does it mean separate? I mean, for whatever reason, I had this idea that they were like attached. And that they like Siamese, but maybe I'm misunderstanding it. You know, I don't know. That's what I wrote here. But okay, so chalukim, you're saying means different. Okay, that they were very different. So maybe, yeah.
Well, in the womb, they could have been together as twins, but coming out, they're not.
Right. Or here's another thought. Here's another what.
Or they're not identical twins.
Right, or they're not identical, and that's sure. Maybe that's what's odd.
Right, but what I'm saying is that
they were
right.
Here.
Okay.
Right. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe the idea that they're not identical. I mean, twins can it's not common, I think, but identical twins could share the same sack. They could also not share the same sack,
right.
And certainly non-identical was a fraternal. They would not. They don't share the same sack.
Two
separate sacks.
Monoamniotic is rare. And
right.
It can be dangerous. Yeah.
Right. So I once did a bris for babies that were born. They were in the same sack, and you know what their parents named them. This is true. David and Yonatan. So that was very sweet. Very sweet. Anyway, Anyway, so we move on. So now the way that the Torah describes them is that they are. That they look different, right? That one comes out admoni, which we assume means red, redhead. Kulo kadera sear. I'm not sure what that means. Sear means hair, but the word yeah. So what does that mean? Did he have a hairy chest? Did he have a beard? Did he have a beard? Did he have
hair on the head?
Okay, so I mean, a lot of babies have a lot of hair on the head. I mean. Okay, I remember learning this when I was little and just thinking that he had just hair all over his body, like he was almost like a monkey. I mean, I don't know. You know how long it took me to learn what the word Esav means? I thought Esav was like Esav, and Esav is grass, and grass is hair, and therefore, I mean, that's what I thought as a kid. Esav comes from the word Asa, that he's just made. You know, he doesn't need to grow into himself in the same way that some babies need to. Anyway, then it describes Yaakov, it doesn't describe Yaakov at all. It only says that he's holding on to his brother's ankle, and that's really it. It's only later on, when Yaakov is going to be taking the bracha with his mother's instruction, that he says that my brother is an ish sa'ir, and I'm an ish chalak. My brother is, I guess, hairy, and I'm smooth. So, so that's where we get a difference in them. And we'll learn a couple cool things about that when we get there. Anyway, so, now they're described in the following way, and I love this, meaning the way the pasuk describes. V'yigdalu ha'ne'arim, v'yihi Esav ish yodea tzayid ish sadeh, v'yakov ish tam yoshev olim. So what do these things mean? What does a yodea tzayid mean? Yodea means... Who knows, right? That's what Yodeh means. What is Tzayid? Okay, so Tzayid is probably more to trap, okay? I mean, there is an element of hunting, but it's more trapping. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the malacha, for example, is trapping. Right. It's not hunting. Hunting is a different isser. No. Okay. Sayid, what is an ish sadeh? Well, ish means a man, and the sadeh means a field. So he's a man of the field. What's a man of the field? Okay, an outdoorsman. What else? A farmer. Okay, right.
I mean,
okay, my point is that it's not so simple. Right now, what do we get from this? The Torah is not being clear. Why is the Torah being so unclear? Okay, I mean these things are important for a larger. I can't analyze the whole parsha, but I'm just throwing out there that it's not clear. What is it? Ish tam. Maybe. Okay.
Wholesome.
Perfect. Whole. Complete. Simple. So, okay, I mean, possible.
Supposed to remind you about Cain and Hevel.
Right, okay. And remember that they were Tomim, so he is an Ish Tam, who was a Tom, you know, okay. And what is Yosheva Halim?
It's a home brother.
It doesn't bother people.
Okay, well, literally, it means somebody who sits in a tent. Okay, whose tent? What tent? What are we talking about? You know, there is a precedent for Yosheva. We have in Parshas Bereishis, Yoshev Ohel Umikneh. Hey, one of the descendants of Cain is a Yoshev Oelu Mikneh. He sits in a tent. What's Mikneh? No, it takes care of animals, right? So, you know, the idea that Yaakov is a Yoshev Oelu could be an indicator to us that when he gets to Lavan and Lavan says to him, oh, what do? He says, I'm a shepherd. Oh, really? How long have you been a shepherd? Long time. You know, because he's been doing it. I mean, and he's clearly very good at it and successful. I don't know how much, I'm sure he learned on the job, but to suggest that he's never done it before he gets to Lavan's house seems to not fit in with what a Yoshev Olin really is. Anyway, so look what the Netziv says is these are the definitions that here. Yodeat Said, Latsud Anashim Bechelkas Lashono. What does that mean? He's a
charmer.
He's a charmer. Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Okay, a charmer. Yeah, and in Ish Sadeh, Yisakav Basadeh, right? That his business is in a field, which again goes back to the question of, is he doing drug deals or is he a farmer? Right? What kind of business do you have in the field? Or an orchard guy? Ish Tam, Mutmamim Anashim Mashbepiv Kach Balibo. Right? He's a straight shooter. The way that he does it, it's like tamim, right? He's pure. The way he deals with people, what's in his mouth is in his heart. Im kein hu tamim, eino nechlak l'shnayim, omer kach v'libo kach. He's not, there's no two sides to him, right? A yodeat tzayin is a trickster, right? I mean, you know, we can use even not less nice words than a trickster. But Yaakov is an ishtam, straight shooter. Yosheva olim iskav babayis, right? His work is not in the field, it's in the house. Muvan shema oil Torah tefillah. So there he goes back to the party line of what the oil is, the tent of Torah and davening. So I mean I don't know what kind of profession that is, you know, unless he's like a I was going to say a Hasidic Rebbe, because at least with the Hasidic Rebbe they give you a kvittel and they give a donation. The Kohel guy, people give you a little bit of heartache. They don't really want to give you a donation. Okay. And then the Torah gives us a really bad parenting advice from Yaakov, from Yitzchak and Rivka. Pasuk Chavches, Vayahav Yitzchak as Esav, Ki Tzayid Befiv, Rivka Ohevas as Yaakov. Okay, yeah, it seems that Yitzchak's love for Esav is conditioned on something, whatever the Tzayid Befiv. So we'll look what the Netziv says it is. So I found this to be interesting because, you know, what do we think it is? Or we've probably heard in the past, that Tzayid Befiv means either that he feeds his father, or that he tricks his father, right? He says to him, how do you do, you know, special mitzvah, taking miser, salt, you know, that thing. So he says something different. So Yitzchak and Rivka, believe it or not, and it's hard to believe when you read the Torah, he says they were on the same page. Okay, Yitzchak and Rivka did not, it's not like Yitzchak was blind to Esav's reality. Shneim yadu de'ikar azera asher lo ne'emar ki Yitzchak ikar el chazara. That Yitzchak will call Yitzchak. They knew that the promise that had been given to Abraham is that it's going to be through Yitzchak that you're going to have children, but not all of Yitzchak. So that one of Yitzchak's kids is going to be right. I'll just say in a different derech. Okay, and who Yaakov Yoshev Ohel Abraham Torah? Yaakov is the one who follows in the footsteps of Grandpa Abraham. or Zaydi Avram, or Saba Avram. Barak Ava Achozeres Hayil Li Yitzchak Es Esav the Mishamish Loka Avda Benana B'Shimush HaMeod. That why did Yitzchak have a special affinity for Esav? Because Esav was a man of the field. Esav was a busy guy, and he would serve his father. The one who did Kibbutz Avraham, and we know that's one of the concerns that Yaakov had that Esav carried over him. That Esav did Kibbutz Avraham. Right? If Yaakov's the kettle guy, he's like, I'm sorry, I can't pick up a cup of coffee. I'm sorry, So why does Yitzchak have this affinity for Esav? Because Esav serves him. Serves him, meaning in a Kibbutz Avraham sort of way. So that's what Kitzayid B'Fiv means. And Rivka, why does Rivka not have those kinds of feelings? She didn't need her sons to do anything for her. She was fully capable. Now, does that mean Yitzchak is not capable? We see from the next chapter that Yitzchak is fully capable too. But that doesn't take away from the role that in his case, children, Esav would pay for.
And I always thought that Yitzchak wasn't able to do a lot, that he was really blinded from the...
That's later on. Okay. Now, in the parsha in general, after the birth of these of Yaakov and Esav, so you have essentially three stories in the parsha. One is the sale of the birthright. The second one is all Perek Chaf Vav, which is basically Yitzchak, the main thrust of Yitzchak's story of the Torah, and it deals primarily with his business dealings and Avimelech, the king of Gerar, and the wells. And then you have the Yaakov taking the bracha at his mother's instruction after Yitzchak has given Esav instruction to go prepare some food for him. So I'm fascinated very much by the two Yaakov Esav narratives, the before and after Perek Chav Vav. Unfortunately, the Netziv did not give as much attention as I would have liked to the soup episode. We'll look at the Pesukim real fast, and then we're going to look at this middle of page 2 and the end of his comments on Perek Chaf Hei. Okay, so starting with Pasuk Chav Tes. Vayazid Yaakov Nazid, vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayev. Yaakov is cooking some item. Esav comes from the field and he is tired. Vayomer Esav Yaakov. Esav says to Yaakov, aliteni na min adom azeh. I once read an article in Megadim in which the author was writing that was making suggestions of not so common translations for words that we see in the Torah, and made the point that na could very well mean raw. You know that the word that describes how you're not supposed to eat the Korban Pesach, al tochlu mimenu, na means raw, right? So it has to be roasted over a fire. But the word na also has other meanings. It sometimes means please. It sometimes means now. But the suggestion was being made here that no means raw. Why? Because min ha'adoma adoma zeh. We know from afterwards what this is, because Yaakov gives him adashim, which is lentils. But Esav's looking at it and it's red. And what's the definition of red lentils? Red lentils equals not yet cooked. Because once they're cooked, what color are they? Brown. You never cook lentils.
I never cook.
Okay, oh, you never cook. All right, even better. So you have to get the metzias. Okay, so lentils which are red are uncooked. Lentils which are no longer red, lentils which are cooked are no longer red. So the fact that Esav is saying this red thing, right, adom twice, it indicates that there's a very good reason to suspect that the word na means raw. He says, give me this raw red stuff. Meaning, I'm so tired, I can't wait for it to finish cooking. And that's why he's called red. Because he's talking about this red stuff. And he's just doubling down on how important it is for him to have it. And Yaakov says, let's talk. Okay? Michra chayom es b'chor razchali. Today, your b'chora, for me, michra... Fascinating stuff. We had, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. I think it was the Ksav HaKabbalah. Last year we did Or Chaim. But the Ksav HaKabbalah, I believe it was, who said that Mikra means the value. Right? And he takes from Eishes Chayil, Miyutza, Verachok, Mepaninim, Mikra. So Mikra means value as opposed to saying sell, because sell would be Timkor or Mechorli. But he didn't say that. He says Mikra Chayom. Anyway, Vayomer Esav. Esav says, Hidayan Ochi Olech Lamus V'lamaz Ali B'chora. He says, I am going to die. And why why do I need this this bechorah? He doesn't say do I need, but he says lama zeli. Or maybe I should say for what then this for me is this birthright? Vayomer Yaakov. Now, does Esav mean that I'm going to die right now? No, it doesn't seem that way because he gets up right after he eats. Vayomer Yaakov yishavali kayom vayishavalo. So he says, swear to me, and he swore to him. Vayim koras b'choras ol Yaakov. End of pasuk. So some of the commentaries who address this actually say Vayim koras b'choras ol Yaakov means that he sold it. In other words, what happened? We had a transaction between them. Esav says, here's a piece of paper that says birthright's yours, or handshake, whatever. And Yaakov says, well, here's the price that we've agreed to, which is not mentioned in the text, but here's the price. And then, after that sale is done, next pasuk, Yaakov nasan leisav lechem nezirat Hashem vayoch vayesh vayakom vayelach. Yaakov gave to Esav the food to eat now that it's cooked. And that's is what I like to call the meal to seal the deal that they had. But the deal was already accomplished in pasuk lamed gimel. So that's the story, and essentially that argument suggests that it wasn't the food that was the price of the birthright. Okay. Anyway, so let's take a look at the way the Netziv presents it. Vayazid Yaakov Nazir Loksi Vayazid Yaakov Adashim Lamdenu Shelo Yada Esav Shu Adashim. And so the first point that he's making is that Esav did not actually know that Yaakov was cooking lentils. Okay. Shilu yada hayomer halitani amun adashim. Then, because he would have said, "Give me the lentils." El shalo yada ki imra tav shel adom. All he knew was that he saw something red. Akena war stamin adom. Zeh yabashkacha kadesh yenikra b'shvil zeh ma'ase adom. So this was because he's going to be called Edom later on. This is why he says Edom now. It's like God's intervention in some way. The mesugal zeh hashem elav. The definition of this guy is Edom. I mean, we know from the way he was born, he's an Admoni. So there you go. So he says that it was just Hashgacha that Yaakov was making this stuff, and that Esav called it by its color instead of okay. But you know, I mean, is there a deeper message? I don't know. Michrachayim was bechoras chali bechora lefnei matan Torah hayinogei lechavod hanhaga. That what was a birthright all about? It was about one's the honor of behavior. And the person would also get a little extra in the inheritance. So that he should sell it to him based on the status of where the father is now. Right? What does Yitzchak own now? Based on that is what Yaakov was offering. So what's Yaakov doing? He's hedging his bets. Okay, think about this, and we're going to see why that's important based on the next comment. But v'lo yuchal l'ton im yishtaneh ha'amecher achakach m'yenogeo az harbeo pachos b'chashar yom. You can't, Esav, come back later and say when daddy dies, and now all of a sudden the birthright is $1 million when today it's only worth 100,000. You can't say because you got your 100,000. That's what I gave you. So you can't say in 100 years when daddy dies, which is or because. Yeah, I mean, it ends up that Yitzchak dies over 100 years after this. So in 100 years, daddy dies, you can't come along and say, because you got your money already. You got your money. So, but Esav's thought process is, okay, Yaakov was just basically offered to buy the Bechorah, the birthright for me. So why on earth would I give it to him? And Esav says, I am going to die. What does it mean? So there are plenty of midrashim which suggest what Esav had done and why he was so tired. Okay, but another way to look at it is that Esav is a man who can't get hunkered down. He's a man of action. Okay, I years ago I knew a fellow who just couldn't sit still. He had in every aspect of his life, he had you know, if he were a school child, they would have said he was Mr. ADD. I mean, just could not. And people and he was very helpful to a lot of people, and people would say to him, you know, what can I do? What can I thank you? He says, when I die, you can thank me. Okay. And then he was killed in a motor accident. It was, you know, a terrible story. But that's Esav. I'm not calling that guy Esav, Chalila. But that's Esav. In other words, there are some people where when you hear that they get cut down in their earlier where they don't die with what's the line about? What's his name? Was it Doc Holliday wanted to die without
with his boots on,
and he ended up dying in bed, right?
He wanted to see his feet.
Right. Okay. So he ended up dying in a bed, right. Something like that. So that was a guy. There are some people you expect them to die with their boots on, right? Because something's going to happen, and that's Esav. And Esav is saying, "Look, if I don't cash in now, you're going to get it anyway, because I'm not going to be around."
Yeah.
I'm not going to be around. So I may as well, you're giving me an offer of a lifetime. I can go to Vegas now. He thought he was going to die before his brother.
Why?
He's a man of the field. He's always out in the wild. He's always in danger. Maybe he'll get caught in a tractor. Maybe some wild animal's going to attack him. And much more than his brother Shuish Menucha. I mean, what's the likelihood Yaakov was going to get attacked by an animal or by a hunter or in some fight when he's sitting at home?
Yaakov didn't do any exercise. So.
That's true, but he also probably didn't watch any television or eat Lay's potato chips. Okay. Zevadai kasher meis habechor ein la banu shvar la alachachai. When the firstborn dies, the brothers do not have. I'm sorry, the children do not have anything, right? The brother inherits, first and foremost. If the firstborn dies while the father's alive, it's certainly the case. So what Esav is saying is, if I can get paid now, because you're going to get it anyway, so I may as well cash in. So that's the point here. And that's why Esav, when he leaves, right, what does it say? He gets up and he leaves and he denigrated the Bechorah because he didn't need it anymore. He was paid in full. What does he say? You know, Bechorah is just a joke anyway. Who deserves to be the Bechor? Whoever's deserving. That's nothing to do with age. Look at this, he says that there were many people in nations who said order of birth is irrelevant. It's about personality, right? And so they would skip over the son who was a little bit of a nebuch because he couldn't handle the kingdom and gave it to the one who was not. Or what happened called Dol Mugvar, right? Siblings would kill each other, and the one who the last man standing is the one who ruled. And it wasn't about age. Okay, all right. So I just thought that again, it's a different perspective than perhaps something which you may have heard before. Maybe you heard it before, but it's important to realize that there's more depth than just Yaakov tricked him out of Bechorah that he really wanted but he didn't want. And that's another theme, by the way, which I think he touched upon, but I didn't give that part to you, about the kavod of what the Bechorah is supposed to represent in the scheme of Yitzchak's family. Okay, now the next comment which we have here. So I skipped a lot of what the Netziv gave us here, because what the Netziv does is he focuses first on what God says to Yitzchak here. Okay, remember that Yitzchak, the coming chapter, Perech Avav, is Yitzchak's, in some ways, reliving certain experiences that Avram had. He goes to Gerar just like Avram went to Gerar. He encounters Avimelech just like Avram encountered Avimelech. He tells everybody that his wife is his sister just like Avram told everybody his wife is his sister. The king accuses him of trying to trick people, although Rivka had not been taken while Sarah had been taken. Okay, he ends up living in Gerar. They get into a fight. There's fights over wells, Avimelech, and then they eventually make a treaty. And so a lot of these things are in a sense repeats of experiences that Avram had, but done in Yitzchak's own style. And in the meantime, we watch Yitzchak become exceedingly successful and wealthy in his business ventures. But. And how does this all start, by the way? Because Vayihira of Ba'aretz, Milvada of Rishon, Asher Yabim Abraham, that there was a famine in the land, separate from the famine that had been in the times of Abraham. And so what does Yitzchak do? He goes to Gerar. And at that time, God says to him, don't go to Egypt, because what did Avram do when there was a famine? Went to Egypt, okay? You don't go to Egypt because you have to be in the land. Okay, and while it doesn't say it here, we typically identify the reason why Yitzchak needs to be in the land because of his role in the Akedah, when he was brought as an offering. But look what God says to him. Pasuk Gimel, Gur ba'aretz hazos v'yayimcha. You have to live here and I will be with you. And I will bless you. Ki l'chal l'zarcha tenis kol aretz hazos v'el. Because to you and to your children, I'm going to be giving these lands. And I'm going to fulfill the promise that I gave to Abraham your father. And I will make your children numerous like the stars. And I'm going to give to your children all of these lands. And the nations of the land are going to be blessed through your children. Why? On account of the fact that Abraham listened to my voice. And he kept my guard, my commandments, my rules, and my Torahs. Okay, so for those who ask, how do we know that Avram kept the Torah? Well, the answer is, God said it. Okay, now, what does that mean? I mean, did Avram eat matzah on Pesach because the Jews left Egypt? Did he say on Kiddush, you know, Zeichelitzias Mitzrayim? I mean, I doubt that Avram did that. But maybe he did Zeich L'maaseh Bereishis. I mean, there's no reason why Avram can't keep Shabbos or things of that nature. But the point is that God makes this declaration, and it's on that declaration that the Netziv has a long comment. So let's take a look at it. Bottom of page 2. Bottom of page 2.
At that time, the Torah wasn't given, he followed whatever God wanted him to follow.
Okay, so what does that mean? Okay, all right. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at the way he says it.
He did a bris to his two sons.
Yeah, he definitely did that. Oh, I had a thought. I don't know how many of you were at the class on Shabbos afternoon, but I saw a comment made by Rabbi Yaakov Medan. I think he was quoting Riyal Ben Nun about the difference between the bracha of kala lazarcha natati as kala aretz, that I gave your children all the land, versus eretz Canaan. He makes this distinction, okay? Because in the Torah defines those two things as kala aretz azos is minhar mitzrayim and nahar paras, from the Nile to the Euphrates, and Canaan is defined by certain geographical points in the land of Canaan, like Sidon, Lebanon, right, the north, like the Lebanon area, down to Beersheba, just north of the Negev, let's say, and from the land of the Plishtim, which is Gaza, and it actually says Gaza in the Torah, to the Jordan River. And so Rabbi Nun makes the point that Canaan is for Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, that line. But Kol Haaretz is for Avraham's other descendants. So who lives in Kol Haaretz? Ishmael, Esav, and the children of Keturah. So, and Yitzchak is told the same thing. Your children, who's your children? Your children is Esav. Esav's included. Where's Har Seir? Where's Edom? It's just, you know, southeast of the Dead Sea. Or south and east of the Dead Sea is where that is. Okay, Midian is a little more south of that. So, you know, just something to bear in mind. That even Yitzchak is told that, even though it's not Kibbutz Yitzchak that you get this land, but the land, your children will be living there. And we know that this is true, by the way, because when the Bnei Israel are coming back, they're told, don't touch Esav, don't touch Seir. I gave that to Esav as an inheritance. Stay out of that area. Okay, the Torah says, Heima Torah Shevachzav Shebal Peh, that the Torahs that Abraham listened to and kept, or they're written in the oral law. Some Avram was involved in the rules of the Torah. So Hashem is giving reasons why Yitzchak is going to merit to have wealth and blessing. Look at this. Abe, you made Kollel jokes, okay?
Right.
He says that the merit that comes to Israel in Parnassa comes from work. And if you thought that that wasn't clear enough, look at the next three words. V'lo b'schus ha-Torah. And it's not in the merit of the Torah. K'moshe kasati le'el, as I said earlier, the Nitziv says, Yud Beis, Yud Zayin. Mikol Mokom, ha-osik v'Torah gam ke nizam b'zeh ha-koach. But nevertheless, somebody who involves the Torah will somehow still be supported. U'chumachusa de'ara. She'mefarnes anshe medina b'shnei ofanim. That the people of a land, they have parnasa in two ways. Most people have their parnasa through working the land. And somebody who works the land that's given to him will have bread. But there's another type of group. What's anshe chayil? Hatov sim cheret. Shomrei medina v'melucha. How do soldiers get paid?
Government.
Spoils. Government. The government. Okay, they pay from the king's money bin. Even though, what does a soldier produce? What does a soldier produce?
Security
destroys. What does a soldier produce?
Nothing.
Okay. So why does he, the guy who produces something, so he eats what he produces. You're a productive member of society. That's fine. You're an American. You understand that. Okay, shkayich. They're not doing anything. They're not. Okay, but you're right. They're servicing the king. Right, so the person who is working his land, he basically supports himself. He's not honored with any wealth, but he can sustain himself. But a soldier is, how is he sustained? With somehow, maybe somebody gives him bread and he sleeps on the ground. He says, but it's only after he's really put in, the time and has elevated through the ranks, at that point in time, then he gets a handsome salary. Okay, like the king.
In regard to where it says about the farmer, he sustains himself, but his excess, how does he make money? He sells his wheat or corn or cattle or whatever it is. He sells it, so he's feeding other people through.
You're thinking very 20th century. You're thinking very 20th century and 21st century.
In the olden days, how did they make money?
No, it's trade.
Okay, so.
But how far could your stuff actually go? People farmed for themselves. They worked from day to night so they could eat. And then,
people that didn't farm.
But that's the point that he's making. He's saying that the people who farmed, all they're doing all day is working. You made the point at your what do you call it? Once upon a time, how far did people go in their lifetime?
4 miles.
Right? Maximum 4 miles. Why? Because they couldn't leave their farm. They couldn't leave their animals. They had to get back. So even if they walked over for Thanksgiving, why is Thanksgiving once a year? It's like the Jews, we look at Thanksgiving and we laugh our heads off because we do Thanksgiving every week. Okay, it's called Shabbos. But for people who this is their one time, or maybe Christmas is another time, that's it. Because they'd come in, get together for a meal, and then go home. There's no such thing as going very far. And people were not, everybody was, okay, you're a farmer, shkoyach. You're not a chashava, important person that people are going to, give, or assume to be a dignitary. Kach yesh nafkaminim, Yisrael zochim lisparnes b'shvil avoda, b'tchila tzveim b'lechem u'birchas ha'aretz. So if Bnei Yisrael, if they merit to lisparnes, right, to have parnasa, For the sake of the work, first they eat the bread and the blessings of the earth. And they're not getting they're not becoming major dignitaries. What does the Mishnah say? That somebody who starts in Torah, they got to be on the floor, right? They got to pay their dues. You pay your dues. You work hard, and what do you have at the beginning? You eat kachi darka shatora. What do you eat? Pas. Pas b'melach tochal. I'm certain tishte. Right. So I mean, he doesn't quote it, but it's, he's assuming that everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. Kamo shamar yishayah navi. That the way you pay your dues when it comes to Torah study is through real amelus, through living on the ground. Right, the people who how did they get their sustenance? They went over to their own cow and they milked it. So you have milk of goat, you have bread. Right, first you got to start with bread and salt. Okay, so you have to minimize your being a part of the way of the world. Think about Rabbi Kiva, a great example. Right? Rabbi Kiva starts off when he's just a Kiva. And what is he? He's got nothing. And all the years that he's studying, what's his wife got? Nothing. And then he shows up after many years, and his father-in-law, who works, says, "Ah, you're such an amazing Tam Chacham. My son-in-law's a bum." He says, "Well, what if your son-in-law were like me? Ah, then I'd support him, because, shkayach, right? You've worked hard to earn." And that's what he says. That's how it comes. Then people exalt him and they honor him and they, you know, sustain him in the way that they need, because it's for their honor and for their glory. It's like the general in the army. Sefer Shmos, etc. That those who study in Torah or are involved in Torah, they are matzliach. Ma'ainu shamar kadosh baruch hu, tam la'brach b'shefa yisera, shehu b'zchus shayah Avram Avinu osik b'torah kol kach. Why was Avram successful? How was Avram wealthy? And he says, because Avram was, v'yishmor mishmarti misosai chukosai v'sorosai, because Avram said, "God, I want to know your ways. Right? Let me know how to serve you." Okay, it's one thing to believe in you, but you must want something to happen. Is it just that I should call out in your name? Is that it? Or is there more to it? And so that's what Avram did, and God attests to it to his son. Right, and this, by the way, is something that the Netziv did a few weeks ago. I don't remember if I shared it with you, but he said it was probably Parshas Vayera at the Akedah, that where he describes how Yitzchak is the model of avoda and parnasa, working and getting sustenance. And that Yitzchak, in essence, brought that to the world. And we see, I mean, Yaakov for sure, we know that, but Yaakov is dealing with a particular individual in where he's living, and he's kind of locked into one space. But Yitzchak, you look at this chapter, Perek Chavav, and you see that he really earns his stripes. I mean, he earns, what's the phrase he used before? Not earns his dues. Pays his dues. Yitzchak very clearly does, and it's a tremendous tribute, I think, to Yitzchak that he's able to achieve the things that he achieves.
But wasn't Yitzchak also Shomer Mitzvos and Chukim and Sarasuk? It seems like he's being discarded, that he's continuing.
Well, Yitzchak, you have to realize here, is only starting off. You know, Yitzchak hasn't done anything yet.
Willingly.
No, but you know, I mean, look, I don't want to say my only. One problem that I have with this chapter, which is a source of confusion to me, is when does it take place? Because we see the birth of Yaakov and Esav in the previous chapter, and then Yitzchak comes to this place and he tells people that his wife is his sister. Well, where are Yaakov and Esav? So does this take place before Yaakov and Esav are born? Because I mean, you have to remember that Yitzchak and Rivka were married for 20 years before the boys come along. So when does this take place? Is it out of order? And if it's not out of order, then where are Yaakov and Esav? And if it is out of order, okay, then you know I have less of a problem. But then just tell me that. Okay, so all right, fine. Now. The Torah tells us that Yitzchak settled in Grar, Yitzchak with Grar, it's Sheni. People asked about his wife, etc. And Okay, I'm not. I don't want to go too much into this. So, look at Pasuk Yud-Aleph, what the Netziv said. Well, I'm not sure the Pasuk inside. After he discovers the ruse, and he realizes that she is, in fact, his wife, so he yells at Yitzchak, he says, you know, what'd you do this for? Somebody almost sinned. Of course, he's talking about himself. I love that. Somebody almost sinned with your wife. But you know who he blames? He blames some Polish Jewish poet. Kimat shachav achara amis ishtecha. Okay, sorry about that. Okay. He says, anybody who touches this man and his wife will die. Is Avimelech being nice here, or is Avimelech being a piece of work?
He's afraid. That's why he doesn't want anyone to touch him.
What's he afraid of?
Because he learned from Avram.
Well, he didn't learn. He said to Yitzchak, somebody almost took your wife. Look at the Netziv. I found this to be fascinating. Pasuk Yud-Aleph. Efshar lefaresh anogei l'ra'a, d'ma ze lazir ata. He says, you can't explain this to mean whoever touches him for bad, because what's he coming to warn them? V'ein l'mar mishum shenoda she yishto, nitzrach lazir sheloiv kubo. You can't say that he's telling people, you know, now that we know that she's his wife, he should leave her alone. Dimkein lama ze zir alishto. Because if that's the case, then why is he saying, don't touch his wife? Ela lehefech. Rather, opposite. Shemaz Avimelech leharos sinah shebelibo. He says that what Avimelech is saying here, he's demonstrating his absolute hatred. Vigazar shelo yischaruimo, leman lo yisu ayin alishto. He says there is a business ban on this guy because you guys, meaning Gerarites, you can't control yourselves. If you go into this man's environs, and you're going to see his wife, you're just going to, Avimelech says, stay away from him. Dan. Kachi midrash, ve'amru ha'uadin, yaguru, yitzfunu, heimek ve'yishmoru, v'haya b'zeh, hezek li'yitzchak. So he says, this was a tremendous, right? I mean, it's a BDS, the original BDS, okay? The original BDS. Aval ma'asa Hashem, pasuk yibayz, v'yizra yitzchak ba'aretz ahivim, so shana ahime sh'arim. Yitzchak founded a Haredi town, Vayivarcheu Hashem, and Hashem blessed him. Look at the Netziv says, "Mischar tvuah v'lo naaseh ritzon ha'melech." Okay, Yitzchak was very blessed in how much tvuah came, and the desire of the king did not come to fruition. Vayigdal ish ba'osher, and he was extremely successful with his wealth. Okay. I do want to get to the stuff that, with Yaakov and Esav with the bracha. So let's just quickly look at the two things that I put in bold. I give a larger package, very ambitious, knowing I'm not going to get through it because one of the people who usually comes and is not here tonight, but I'm going to be giving him a source sheet afterwards, likes to go through it all. So let's take a look at the parts which I gave you, and then we'll skip to the last parts about Yaakov and Esav. Okay, so Pasuk of Gimel, after all this, Vayal Misham Be'er Shava. Okay, so it is the relationship of Yitzchak and Avimelech is a love-hate relationship. I think Avimelech loves to hate Yitzchak, and Yitzchak, you know, I mean, so much so that Netziv keeps talking about how Avimelech broke the treaty that was made with Avraham, which is so crazy when you consider the way Avimelech spoke to Avraham at the time, said, you better not break the treaty, Avraham. And Avraham's like, okay, I'll, you know, Anochi Shaveya, and I'll swear. And Avimelech is concerned about his own children. Then he comes along and he changes. Anyway, Vayal Misham Be'er Sheva. So this is an interesting insight, which I have. I found it interesting. And that is, what is the name of this place? Be'er Shava. What's Be'er Shava? That's what Abraham swore to. And what's the place that Yitzchak swears to? Swears in? When they make a shavua at the end? Look at the Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Be'er Sheva. So I always wonder if it's two different places, if they just renamed it. But it's very consistent. And, you know, you can say it's always on an Esnachta or a Sof Pasuk, and therefore it's Sheva. But it's very consistent. It's always Be'er Sheva when it's referring to Avram's place. And when it refers to Yitzchak's place, it's Be'er Sheva. Anyway, the Nitziv says, Kasha haya al Yitzchak ladur b'sedeh uvekvar. It was very difficult. I love this because what he's saying is, he's giving us something about Yitzchak's personality. Yitzchak could not be confined to a field or a village. He was a city person. Or maybe calling out in God's name was easier. It's like, you know, let me build a shul. So when he was thrown out of Gerar, he had to spend some time in the field. Nisa davar lagur be'er Shava, Shigam who he ergadola, he really wanted to move back to Be'er Sheva. Avaladayin lo nichnasim in Beso Lisham, but he had not yet moved there with his household. Shayare Shalo Yukanubo Sariya Yirahi Gamkein, Alkain Boy Love Mare Hashem. And so that's why, because he was concerned about it, he gets another vision here. Pasuk of Dalet, Vayira Elav Hashem Balayla Hahu Vayomar Nochilayam. So God gives him all the promises that he needs. And so in Pasuk Chaf Hey, rather, Vayivin Sham Mizbeach, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, Vayeit Sham Olo, Vayichru Sham Adei Yitzchak Be'er. So after he got the promise from God that it's all going to work out, then he said, "Okay, now I can settle here."
Yitzchak never made a shul with David.
He does at the end because look in Pasuk Chaf Tes. Yitzchak says, "Why do you guys come back to me to make peace?" And they say, "Oh, we see that God is with you." And then they make a promise in Chavtes that we're not going to touch you, and because we've done good with you. And so Yitzchak makes for them a mishta. That's Pasuk Chavtes. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why it's called. Well, no. It's Be'er Sheva because of the seven wells, and the name of the seventh well is Shiva. But he makes a party for them, Pasuk Lamed. So they do make a promise to each other, and Yitzchak sends them off. But I like this comment that he makes on Pasuk Lamed. He says, "Vayaz lamishtek kederach hatzadikim lispayes b'nikala b'tzilumi shemavakei shalom." So he says he makes a party because that's the way that the tzadikim, to appease, to calm people down, in order to make peace. I have to tell you. In the one about Uverachticha Virbesi Azaracha, so I wrote here a comment, Holocaust, ? Because So the Nitziv, of course, died in 1893, I think, 1894, and, so many years before, certainly before, even before World War I, by 20 years, and could not have anticipated where the world was going to go. But he talks about how people who are Oskim Torah would be protected in the future. They'd be protected. And he talks about some of the great rabbis who were protected in Churban Rishon and Sheni. They were saved with Hashgacha Pratis because they were tzaddikim. So I don't know what the Nitziv would have said had he seen a Holocaust. Okay, I gave you the thing in Pasuk of Zayin, V'tashalchuni Me'itachem, which we just skipped because the Nitziv, we've seen him talk about the difference between S and Im, right? Both meaning with. So that's why that's there. Okay, but we're gonna skip now. Okay, so now let's move on to the last portion of the parsha, which is Perek Chav Zayin. Before I do that, sorry, just a quick thing: Lamed Dalet and Lamed Hey, just discuss how Yitzchak and Rivka personally responded to the wives that Esav brought into the home, because even though Rivka grew up with Avodah Zarah and was used to it, so the Nitziv says that they each, Batiena Moras Ruach, that they were a source of just tremendous consternation and difficulty and pain to his parents. So he says that it's for different reasons. For Yitzchak, he was bothered by the Avodah Zarah because he didn't grow up with that. But look at the last two lines in the chapter there, and then Siv, towards the end of the line, Va'asher asu dvarim machisin l'Rivka bein adam l'chavero. Rivka just hated their midos. She hated the way they behave. And ha'yisem aras ruach l'Rivka, because the idolatry didn't bother her. She grew up with it, she was used to it, she knew what it was all about. But the but it was their character traits which she thought was bad for her son because they were the chitetz. And of course, another point that the Netziv makes is that after Yitzchak and Rivka send Yaakov away towards the end of the parsha, and instruct him to marry of the daughters of Lavan. So the Torah tells us that at the very end of the parsha that Esav goes ahead and marries the daughter of Yishmael. The daughter of Yishmael. Not because his parents told him to do so, but because, you know, he can take a hint. And so he figured out to do that. What's fascinating is, if you do the math, and the Gemara Megillah goes through this, and Rashi says, you know, why does the Torah tell us the age of Yishmael when Yishmael dies? In order to help us figure out the ages of everybody, and you work backwards, and you figure out, the Gemara Megillah goes through this in great detail, but essentially what we figure out is that with the brachos that Yitzchak gives to Yaakov and to Esav take place when they are 63, and Yitzchak, who is 60 years older than them, is 123. Okay? Do the math. If Yitzchak is 123, so we often say that why is Yitzchak doing this? He says, I'm blind, I'm old, and I don't know when I'm going to die. What does Rashi say? Because he knows his mother died at 127, and so he's within 5 years, you got to start thinking about it. What's the problem? 123, 124, 125, 126, 127. Unless you count 123 as one, so then that's 4 years. But anyway, I'll give you a better one. If Yitzchak is 123, how old is Ishmael, his brother? 137. How old is Ishmael when he dies? 137. So now, I don't know, because there's no way to know. Did Ishmael already die? Yitzchak is saying, my brother died, so now I got to think about these things. Right? Because same generation, got to think about it. Or did Esav get engaged to Yishmael's daughter, and Yishmael said, oh, Gival, this is my son-in-law. Drop dead. Okay, now you think I'm crazy, okay, because I had that question for a while. But did I give it to you? Look what the Netziv says. Look at the last page. Pasuk Tes. Okay, I mean, I don't know, meaning I don't know how the Netziv knows this, but look what he says here. Kvar hel, Pasuk Tes. That Yishmael died after betrothal. Okay, so Bill, it's not crazy. The Netziv, he can hang his hat on the Netziv. You see that? All right. It doesn't help in terms of my question. I had a bigger question, which is, is that actually true? What was Yitzchak in fact doing? Okay, we don't have the time to go through all this. So let me see if I can just
also by him marrying. I was saying by him marrying Yishmael, he'd still be appetite the Yaakov,
wouldn't he? No, so marrying Yishmael, he's at least following the idea that you marry into the family. Okay, we can have whatever thoughts we have, negative, positive about Yishmael, even though the Torah is, I would say, really more between. Meaning, at one point, the Torah is a little critical of Yishmael, but more than not, I'd say the Torah is. If this is a spectrum of where Yishmael is, and this is bad, and this is good, Yishmael is more like neutral towards good than to the negative side. So certainly, there's a great shot that I saw when the brothers say, let's sell Yosef to the Yishmaelim, v'yadeinu al tihivo ki achinu v'sareinu hu, and our hands will not be on him because he is our brother, that they're not referring to Yosef. They're referring to Yishmael. Yishmael, they'll take care of him. You know, they'll make sure that he gets to Egypt safely and out of the picture. So, it's just interesting to consider. All right, we'll just do two things in all this, and then we'll leave it. One that I wanted to mention to you, which I'm not going to do you inside, is that remember how Rivka tells Yaakov to get two goats? Why two goats? How much can Yitzchak really eat? So he says two goats because she needed the skins to cover up Yaakov. So I thought that was interesting because in other words, you need two full goats, I guess, somehow to make the clothing that Yaakov needed beyond the clothing that Esav had. So that was one. Okay, let's read Esav b'chorecha because that's one of the biggest challenges, which is when Yaakov comes in and Yitzchak says, who are you? And he says, Anochi Esav b'chorecha, I am Esav, your firstborn. So there are different explanations to explain what that means. Right, I think Rashi says, "Anochi, I am who I am." Right, Yaakov is basically pulling off a Popeye. I am who I am, and Esav is your firstborn. Okay, that's one interpretation. I think it was the Eksav Kabbalah, if I'm not mistaken, who said, "Anochi Esav Bechorecha," that he said that Esav could be a nickname, right? Because, and this happens all the time in the Torah, that a person's name would be based on what they did. There are plenty of people in the Torah whose names have changed. We don't have their real name. Okay, and that Esav comes from the word Asa. Like Yaakov is saying, I am the doer. At this stage of his life, Yaakov is no longer an Ishtam, Yoshev Olim. He's a person who does things, who does mitzvahs. And so Anochi Esav means I'm the doing guy. And Bechorecha, he is technically the Bechor. And that's another point that the Netziv makes over and over again, that because Esav sold the Bechorah, you know, that's something which makes him not a liar, which makes Yaakov not a liar. So let's read this pasuk Yitzes, and then we'll look at the thing which I put in bold, and then we'll end with that. Okay, Esav bechorah, hizki lo bechorah. Yaakov mentions the bechorah. All he needed to say theoretically is I'm Esav, but he says I'm Esav the bechor. Ba'asher bracha zu hayirak ma'ashenogea le'olam hazeh. He says, because the bracha that he's going to be giving is a bracha for this world. And if it's a physical bracha, and we know that it's a physical bracha because we see the bracha that he gives him, it's about being able to extract from the fat of the earth, etc. So that is what the firstborn is supposed to get, more than holy items. Because holiness has less to do with the bechor. If the Bechor is supposed to get the holiness stuff, well then that's what it is. But what happens after the golden calf? All the holiness stuff is taken away from the firstborns and it's given to a specific tribe who didn't participate. So you can't say that the Bechor is by definition holiness when it's not. And even though there is maybe a spiritual element to it, Mikomak, just skip the next five, like those little acronyms and shemos. Mikomakum inenem echras harbei esa yisrono shalachir. But it doesn't override the other positive qualities of somebody else who might have a spiritual bent. Masha enkein in yane olam hazeh, as opposed to being a physical, you know, in the world, the Bechor needs that because the Bechor is supposed to be the one who's taking over, is supposed to take care of the household, and needs to provide sustenance for the family. That's the Bechor's job. And that's why Yitzchak wanted to give Esav, his firstborn, the physical brach of this world, because Esav, I'm going to die, you got to take over. Yaakov says, no, I'm the one, I'm the one who purchased it. And that's what makes it true. But Yitzchak didn't know about that purchase. Now, I think it's bizarre that Yitzchak wouldn't know about that purchase. I mean, after all these years, but and the Netziv does not cover for how Yaakov says Esav. He does not address that point, and that to me is a little troubling because that really needs to be addressed if you're going to say Kitei Nemes LiYaakov that Yaakov is a truth teller. When he calls himself Esav, you have to have an explanation for that. And I think the Netziv there does fall short, unfortunately. Okay.
Well, what's the Madaz wrong?
What?
What's the Madaz wrong in that?
Yeah, so the Netziv is all over the fact that Rivka was making this happen because she knew. And a lot of the commentaries do that. Okay.
But she from the house of Laban.
Well, yes. So that's a different... Okay, that's a different, point. Okay. Last point that I want to make, I put it in bold, so either it was really cool, or I don't remember what it is, but we're going to read it. And that is, so when Yitzchak comes in, when Esav rather comes in, so one of the things which it's interesting, I'll just show you one point in the pasuk which I didn't really notice. If you look at pasuk Lamed, it says, "Vayhi kasher kila Yitzchak levarechas Yaakov." As Yitzchak finished blessing Yaakov, "Vayhi achi atzal yasa Yaakov meis penei Yitzchak aviv." When Yaakov went out, but look what it says: "Yatzo yatzo." He went out. It's a double language. So he went out from in front of Yitzchak. "Ve'esav achiv b'mitzido," and Esav came from his trapping. "Vayas kamu matamim vayavela aviv." So what does "vayas" mean? And he had already made, or and now he made.
Now he's making.
Okay, so I always thought before reading the Netziv on this parsha this week that what the Torah is telling us is that basically it's like a scene from a bad television show, you know? That here's Yitzchak and Yaakov, and as soon as Yaakov leaves the room, you know, da da da, and Esav walks right in with it from maybe perhaps a different entrance. Okay, so he said, so I mean, the way the Netziv paints it, it's possible. But at the same time, he says that Yatzo, Yatzo, Yaakov. Yatzo means he left the room. Yatzo means he left the house. So they wouldn't bump into each other. And that Esav, Vayaskam hum atamim, Vayaveh laviv, that Esav needed to prepare the food in guess whose house? In Yitzchak's house. Why? Because Yitzchak did not trust the mashgichot at Esav's house. Okay, that's what the Netziv says. And the mashgicha in his house was a good mashgicha that he was willing to trust. Anyway, Vayecherad Yitzchak Charadah, so Esav comes in, he says who he is, and he says, Mi'efo hu atzad sayid vayaveli. He says, who's the one who tzad sayid? Again, it's a double language. So look what he says. Yatzah beruach ha-kodesh zeh al-lashon. Yitzchak had a divine spirit come upon him when he said this. Dimashma'o, shetzad es atzayid, hainu es Esav, shemachuna ish tzayid. That who's the one who tzad tzayid, who trapped the trapper, not who trapped his own meat, but who trapped the trapper. Yitzchak did not say that it was Yaakov. Sharihu lashon harak. Zavi lashon harak. They got metal sinah ben him. He didn't want to get Esav to hate Yaakov. Of course, that didn't really work, at least insofar as the way Esav reacts. I do want to end giving a little bit of credit to Esav, because Esav is understandably upset, and he doesn't say something which is very nice. He says that when my father dies and when he killed my brother, but he doesn't seem to act upon that in the Torah. Now the Midrash is all over his actually acting upon it, and that's a different conversation. Maybe we'll have it in a few weeks, but that's just a thought to conclude with. But you know, if you want to take this, you can feel free to take it. If you can make your way through it, I think that I gave you good stuff on the analysis here of this story. Suffice it to say, the Netziv does follow the line. Because Yaakov had bought the Bechorah, it's totally appropriate for him to get the bracha. And because it's a physical bracha, he needed it, perhaps even more than Esav did, because Esav was already proving that he knew how to live by the earth. And Yaakov needed that bracha because he had his life adventures out ahead of him.